This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, everything you need to know about why big tech is leaving Russia.
Plus what Apple announced at its latest event, including the studio display.
Also on the show, why Hurdle is the hot new game for music lovers.
And we learn how misinformation online is affecting our mental health.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
This episode of The Feed is brought to you by Norton, one of the leading consumer cybersecurity brands.
Trending up.
Well, Amber, another week. I'm going to try and start off the show a little bit more optimistic this week. Let's start with you. What was the highlight of your week in a positive way?
Well, we just celebrated International Women's Day on March 8th. So I always enjoy that day because I love to see women and men and everyone online celebrating women. So that was probably one of the highlights of the week. And I will soon be in sunny Florida, like you, Michael, seeing my parents.
Yes, that would be amazing to get together with your mom and dad, and Connor will be able to see his grandparents. It's interesting you mentioned International Women's Day. So I'm in Australia at the moment, so I apologize for the internet. Australia, unfortunately, is not the best when it comes to being connected. But what I did love to see was women out in force, executives, women in leadership roles here in Australia. And also what I didn't know was there are lots of male statues and celebrating men in certain positions and accomplishments, but not as many women. And so that was the most interesting thing I learned this week from International Women's Week. And I urge everybody to think about that when they're walking around town, when they're looking at history, the way it's captured in their towns, and seeing how many women of their local community are recognized as opposed to men.
Hmm. Interesting. It's definitely, we have a lot of work to do. Interestingly, you'll appreciate this. I was talking to an organization recently who was speaking about how many representatives are interviewed in the media in terms of men versus women. And I believe it was 3 men to 1 woman in terms of experts on air. I thought that was kind of interesting and clearly shows a lot of work to be done there. Nonetheless, Michael, we do want to get to the week's news. And similar to last week, there are big tech companies that are pulling out of Russia. And some of them are limiting services. So everything is changing day by day. But most recently, according to the BBC, TikTok has announced that they will limit some of their services in Russia, as Netflix has announced, I believe, that they are pulling out entirely. So again, this is kind of an evolving story, so it might change by the time you hear this. But nonetheless, we're seeing these tech companies making big moves.
I think it is interesting that we've seen a lot of companies pull out completely right from the start, and it's taken other companies a little bit longer. I understand when companies are looking at targeting people responsible for the atrocities that we're seeing in the Ukraine and targeting those particular people in Russia as opposed to all Russians. But at the same time, you know, it's this hard argument. You know, the entire country of the Ukraine is suffering and being persecuted and is at war. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, one scenario is if companies pull out completely out of Russia, that puts pressure on the local people to be brave and stand up, because obviously if they protest, they can be arrested and face 15 years in jail. However, if they lose all of their services and everything that the West brings, maybe they'll be changed. So it is a very, very tough conversation to have. And staying in the same light, this is quite remarkable. If you look at the news from Airbnb, lots and lots and lots of people from all over the world the Airbnb website to book for places in the Ukraine, and they actually have no plans to visit. So this is one way that they're trying their very best to support people on the ground, because there's a lot of people around the world that feel helpless and want to try and help these people that are losing their homes and losing their country.
Yeah, I saw the story as well. I mean, people just trying to figure out ways that they could potentially help in Ukraine. And I think you're exactly right. People are getting pretty creative when it comes to ways to potentially send in money. Obviously, lots of conversations around cryptocurrency as well, and just trying to do everything possible to be able to help people in Ukraine right now. I mean, it's devastating, and the number of refugees is climbing by hundreds of thousands every single day. And you're right, this is just another example of people trying to help out in small ways. You know, according to Global News, 2 days ago, that would be earlier on this past week, about 61,000 users booked Airbnb stays in Ukraine with no plans to go. So it's always a little bit, I think, rewarding to be able to sort of see how technology can be used in sort of interesting and positive ways, right? It makes people more optimistic about how people come together, and this is just one good example of that, and I'm sure we'll see more as well.
Absolutely, and I think that is the most important thing to focus on is the positive steps that we can try to do if we're in different parts of the world. So, of course, we are a tech show, and we do have an announcement from one of the biggest tech players in the world. So shifting gears, all eyes are on Apple.
Yeah, so also a big announcement from Apple over this past week. They had an event that took place on Tuesday, and my brother actually wrote a pretty thorough blog post, because he's the Apple geek in the family, on my blog over at ambermac.com, kind of hot off the press. So just a quick scan down here, we see an iPhone SE. That is the more affordable version of the iPhone. You know, nothing too revolutionary here, except they announced that it would come with a really powerful chip, an upgraded iPad Air, a new computer called Mac Studio, again, with a really fast chip, and something my brother's super excited about, which is the Mac Studio display. He keeps messaging me, Michael, and saying, this display is just gorgeous. It's a 27-inch 5K Retina screen, and also has its own Bionic chip, and he is really into the display. So check my blog if you want to read more on that one.
I was going to say, that is actually my favorite announcement out of everything. I too thought it was very beautiful, and the crispness and just the display. And then I started to wonder, why in the world have I gotten accustomed to laptop-sized screens that don't look as beautiful and don't give me the same experience? And I do love the sound of a Bionic chip. I don't know what it is, but it sounds Bionic.
Yeah, it sounds pretty speedy and powerful. So again, I think, you know, most importantly, I think the best way to sum up this Apple announcement is that there was nothing sort of revolutionary, but like many Apple announcements, they have upgrades, and it's always impressive. You know, Apple, I think, is one of those companies that has sort of a steady stream of updates when it comes to announcements, and this was just one great example.
Well, stay with us when we return, the rise of misinformation warfare.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
All right. So we wanted to dive a little bit further into a story that we had mentioned off the top of the show, and that is about online information in this invasion of Ukraine. So what we're seeing more and more is that there is misinformation and disinformation that is making waves online. And a lot of people are having a difficult time sorting it out. And so, Michael, before we get into this article that the CBC posted about fact checkers and kind of online detectives who are trying to come to the aid to make sure that everybody gets the information they need, I just want to share with you something that I experienced recently. I was in an Uber and I was taking a ride downtown, which is about 12 and a half minutes. And my Uber driver for 12 and a half minutes was sharing information with me about how the war is a made up situation, and the media is basically showing us these pictures to sell more advertising. And he mentioned a number of different videos that he saw that have been totally debunked. I saw the headlines about them as well. And I was kind of in a weird position, you know, in the sense that, of course, I had to come out and say, hey, listen, like, that's not true. This is what happens. And the whole time I was explaining to him that he needed to check his sources. And then he was telling me where he was getting his information. And it was total garbage. So, Michael, it's unbelievable how far this disinformation travels.
Honestly, I don't even know where to begin with this, because obviously you as well as I know people who are reporters reporting from the war zone and risking their lives, and no one I know makes that decision lightly. And so that to me is quite disturbing, that your Uber driver had that conversation with you. But you're right, this has actually gone mainstream, and media outlets around the world are covering just how fast false information and misleading information about the war has spread. And there are so many outlandish theories being shared online that it's astounding to me that they're so outlandish. I don't understand how anyone would believe them. But they are. And so I don't know how you fix something like this, because there are lots of people on Facebook or Twitter, and then they reshare it. And I actually have seen some people apologize for sharing some posts, because then they worked out later on through to crowdsourcing and was corrected that the information they were sharing was false. So at least I've seen that started to happen. But if you don't know any better, you're only perpetuating the problem. And, you know, almost, I think it's 2 million refugees have been displaced out of the Ukraine. You know, hundreds of people have died. You know, we're on the brink, and I don't mean to sensationalize anything, but we're on the brink of a possible World War III if things aren't held dealt with diplomatically and very carefully. So I don't think anybody is making up the severity of the war, but for people to believe that, it is even scarier, I think.
It is scary. And you know, one of the things that he mentioned to me is, he said, you know, did you, and first of all, I did not bring up this conversation, just to be clear. He's very proud of all the information that he had, all of which was wrong. But he brought up this video that was shared online a few days ago, where it was people in body bags who were moving around. And I saw this video online and I knew right away there was something suspicious about it. Well, it turns out that it was from a February 2022 climate policy demonstration. So it was basically like a climate protest by an activist group, where they're basically saying that, you know, we were going to die because of climate change and inaction. And so they went into a parking lot, got into body bags, and that was the video. Well, of course, someone took that and labeled it as footage from Ukraine. And then you see this kind of reporter on the scene and all these people moving around in body bags behind them. And this is what my driver was saying to me, that he saw, that proved somehow the media was lying. And, you know, it's really disheartening, Michael. And it's not even disheartening, it's going to get people killed, and it's going to really impact how people support a time of crisis like this.
Well, I think you've made a very, very good point. I think the hardest thing here is how he's deciding what he labels media, because I think I've struggled with that ever since the birth of social media platforms. What I consider media outlets and what other people consider media outlets are two very different things. And I can't remember the name of the reporter. I think he was from the BBC, you know, in the war zone. And he said on air, very succinctly, and I'm obviously butchering it, but the difference, you know, I'm accountable for everything I say because I'm attached to a real news organization. Mm-hmm. You're not. and, you know, and he was referring to influencers and people on social media that are suddenly nuclear power experts within 24 hours, or people like your Uber driver, who is now sharing information to you on your ride, unsolicited, it sounds like, and also to someone that is exceptionally informed, which I also find interesting. It almost found, I when you were telling me that, I was like, was he kind of mansplaining you or something during International Women's Week? I started to get my back up and I'm like, wait a second. But I had seen something called crisis actors, which this alarmed me. So there was false claims about crisis actors. There was a video of a young man that had fake blood on his face, and it racked up millions of views, and people were thinking that it was from the war in the Ukraine, but it was actually a hoax. It was footage of an actor from a TV series that was filmed in 2020. So again, these things that are circulating and being reposted are just perpetuating the problem, and actually helping aid Russia and Russia's attack on the Ukraine, because obviously one of the tools in Vladimir Putin's arsenal is misinformation and fake news, and trying to separate people, you know, fact and fiction, and tell a certain narrative and get them all mixed up within themselves and fighting amongst themselves. And so, you know, we just have to be very, very careful. I mean, I don't know what the solution is, to be fair.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's hard to know exactly how we get out of this. And I think at the same time, clearly, this is a massive issue. And you can only have people fact checking so much. You know, as I mentioned, it is reassuring in some ways that there are people online who are using geotags and verifying photos that come out to show that it is true. We have lots of people from different news organizations on the ground reporting, doing an excellent job. But at the end of the day, you know, it is kind of like whack-a-mole, and you can only sort of, you know, play this game for so long when you sort of see that people's energy and time is going towards debunking all of this disinformation. And it's not just on social media sites, we're seeing it in some of the messaging apps as well. So we'll keep talking about this. In fact, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about how misinformation and disinformation is bad for your health.
Well, the only advice that we can give is stick with reporters that you know, outlets that you know, that you're familiar with, that are on the ground. And social media does try, you know, to verify accounts. So look for the blue check, you know, all of those basic things. That's what I would do first. And don't share anything you're not sure about is the only other thing. Stay with us. We have one of our fun segments, Apptastic. We've got a whole bunch of apps to find out where my head was at this week.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now for some new and trending apps. And this week, funny enough, I actually just tried one of these apps. I think I've heard about the other two. And the first one, Michael, I have to tell you, was shared with me by my son, Connor, who thinks this is the best thing in the world beyond the land of Wordle. It's called Hurdle. You want to explain how it works?
It's amazing, and I love this. I didn't like Wordle, and I thought it was silly, and I'm going on the record. Hurdle is amazing. So basically, you have to try and guess. You get a snippet of a song, and then you basically get, I think it's six tries to figure out what it is. And I just think this is great because, and this is going to make me sound super old, but I've been watching an old TV show on the ABC with my mom, and it's like a game show, and it's stuff like that. They'll play music clips, and then the celebrities will try and guess what it is. And so when I saw this, I was like, this is amazing. And it's really enjoyable, and everyone can play it, and you're happy afterwards, and you remember songs you didn't think you knew, and some songs sound like something else. Anyway, I think it's amazing, and it's called Hurdle.
Yeah, I was surprised. So it's such a short snippet of the song, which is amazing. Connor got one of them. The first time he tried it, he got the song and he was super jazzed about it. So no pun intended, because there might be jazz music. Nonetheless, it is fun. I mean, listen, think about how many games and apps Wordle has inspired. It seems as though it's never ending. And this is just another great example of that.
Exactly. The only thing is an interesting twist. Hurdle gives you a skip button, which is a little bit different. But anyways, it's a really fun one, so check it out. The next app we wanted to tell you about, it's if you're ready to take your road trip to the next level, this one might be really good for you. It's called Here, and it's not spelled the same way. I just thought I'd make that clear. It has 9,000 location-based audio stories from coast to coast. So you're adding a story element to your road trip. How cool is that?
That is super fun. And, you know, especially I think as people start to travel or think about travel more often these months ahead, it's a fun way to be able to have stories on their own. I love listening to podcasts and audiobooks. Just love this idea. But this is cool, too, like you said, because it just helps you make a road trip that much more interesting in kind of a contextual way. So really love this idea. I believe it's for iPhone only, just in case people are interested in downloading it. And yeah, it just looks super cool and gives you another reason to kind of do a road trip, Michael, right?
It certainly does. And what is really cool is that the people narrating the stories are some of your favorite celebrities, so people like Kevin Costner and John Lithgow, and it tells you about all kinds of things. So the people, the places, the history of the land you're traveling through. So as you said, it gives a richer contextual sense of the places that you're passing through. So I just thought it was really cool, and it's better than I Spy with My Little Eye, because there's only so many games of that you can play even in your 40s.
Okay, I don't really need to know anything else. But okay, so this is LifeSum. I believe that I downloaded this at one point and had tried it out. It looks like it has more than 50 million users, so a lot of people enjoying it. You know, I'm all about the ratings, Michael. It has 4.7 out of 5. That is really, really good, at least on the Google App Store. And a beautiful app that basically helps you track your food, your eating, your health overall, water, exercise, all of those details.
Yeah, so it's actually super funny that you mentioned the rating. So there was four different health apps that I was looking at, and I had your voice in my head, and I was like, oh, it's a tough one. Which do I pick? And I picked it because of the ratings. So many good ratings. And also what I liked about this app was of the things that it tracks. So it actually helps track your calories, but your macros. And again, my ignorance, I didn't know how important macros are, just because I'd been spending some time with my sister and she's on a weight loss program and exercising and eating healthy, and she explained to me how to track things better and healthier, and so it was really educational for me, and so that's why this app kind of stood out for me, and it teaches you about the information that you're collecting, why it's important. I don't think a lot of apps do that, and so this makes it very easy to understand, easy to collect the data, and easy to see results based on your efforts in trying to eat healthy and be healthier.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, listen, like it's, I think we talked about this before, but it's always amazing to me that when we think about apps, you know, I mentioned it on a recent show where they used to be so simple, and I'm just looking at this, like even Hurdle, right? The complexity that goes into some of these mini software programs that you can run on your tiny little device. I think that's one of the things in the technology space that keeps me kind of motivated, is just the incredible innovation and progress that we have made. And I think sometimes, Michael, we take it for granted. We just think, okay, here's another app I can try, and don't realize there are, you know, potentially dozens or hundreds or thousands of development professionals behind it.
I think that's the best way I've heard it explained from anyone. You're absolutely right. You think about the technology and the complexity that's all packed into what seems so simple, and it is. You know, a little software package all rolled into a nice little neat app. So hopefully people don't take it for granted. This app specifically does have a subscription period. So obviously there are things that are available for free with all of the tracking for food and what you're eating, recipes, and all of those things. But also remember, anything that you want to do that's a little bit more advanced, you might may have to pay for it. So just a quick recap of those three apps. We've got Hurdle, super fun for the whole family. And of course, Here, which should be fun for the whole family, a little bit educational. And of course, LifeSum to help keep you healthy. So of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, tweet us at AmberMack and at MBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag #TheFeed. Coming up, the intriguing link between depression and misinformation.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now we're going to discuss misinformation and its effect on our mental health. And joining us to talk more about this is Harvard Medical School psychiatrist, Dr. Roy Perlis. Hello, Dr. Perlis, and thank you so much for joining us on The Feed.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So we are talking a lot on this episode about misinformation and disinformation. You know, we've seen it during the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen it in terms of recent protests. We're seeing it in Ukraine. Let's talk about where we are right now. How big of an impact is this having on our health?
Well, if we just limit it to a conversation about COVID, I think it's very clear that it's a major reason that people have not been willing to be vaccinated. And we've known that since early on, but it's really continued to be a problem despite substantial efforts to push back.
So when it comes to the impact it has on our mental health, is it as simple as the information out there caused people to be anxious, not trusted, and not get vaccinated? So that kind of just spiraled into making them just unsure in general and becoming negative, and that then caused poor interactions with other people. Like, is it that simple? Because I mean, this could happen with anything, as Amber outlined. You know, we're seeing protests, we're seeing social media. There's so many external factors that are really taking its toll, it seems, on people's ability to function healthily every single day.
So I think it's incredibly complicated, and I think the arrow sort of goes in both directions. So we should try to untangle it a little bit. I think during COVID, there's no question there's been more depression, more anxiety. We run a survey about every 6 to 8 weeks in the United States, in all 50 states. And what we've seen since the beginning of COVID is rates of depression, anxiety about 3 or 4 times higher than the norm before COVID. So people feel lousy, they feel anxious, they feel depressed. And that's been true really since early in the pandemic. And of course, there's a lot of other things going on in the world right now that don't contribute to people feeling very well. What we found is that people who are depressed, people who are anxious, are more likely to believe misinformation. And this is where the complicated part comes in, because I think it does sort of get into a vicious cycle. And I think misinformation also contributes to people feeling worse and exacerbating depression and anxiety. But I think in my mind, the key arrow goes from depression and anxiety to being a little bit more able or a little more willing to believe misinformation.
That is really interesting in terms of what you're talking about as far as who perhaps is more susceptible. And I appreciate your point, because this is something that we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the show, is that what happens when misinformation and disinformation gets to a point, especially during a pandemic, where those words and what is spread online starts to actually impact people's lives and cost lives as well. So I'm not asking you for a remedy for the situation that we're in, but is there any glimmer of hope that things will get better?
Well, I think that there was interest in misinformation, especially as it impacts public health, even before COVID. But I think what COVID really focused our attention on is how dangerous misinformation can be. And so, you know, I think as in many other things in public health, you can either try to limit the supply or limit the demand, right? So with smoking, we have laws about how that restrict how people get cigarettes, and we tax cigarettes. And at the same time, we try to convince people that they probably shouldn't smoke, and if they smoke, they should quit. And I think when it comes to misinformation, and in particular to things like social media and the role of social media in misinformation, I think we need to take the same kind of approach, which is to say we need to pay attention to the sources of misinformation, and we need to pay attention to ways we can make people less susceptible to misinformation.
I really like those two points that you said we could focus on to help prevent this. But I guess if we weren't able to prevent it, and we are suffering, our mental health is suffering, not to put you on the spot, but are there a couple of basic things that you would recommend people could do with a couple of things, tools to help them when they see signs of depression? Or, I mean, obviously one would be, you know, see a professional, sure. But, you know, are there some everyday things that people can do to help lift their mindset into a more positive, healthy way when they're kind of going about their daily activities?
Absolutely. I would be remiss if I didn't point out, you know, if people are having trouble functioning because they feel depressed, if they're having thoughts of death, if they're having thoughts of ending their lives, it's really important to get an evaluation rather than to sit around thinking, gee, I wonder if I'm depressed. A good starting point for a lot of people is their primary care doc. If they can't get to their primary care doc, there are a lot of public health hotlines, depression hotlines, suicide hotlines. So, you know, the first thing that we teach our medical students and residents is don't worry alone. People are worried, they should seek help. And just because they get an evaluation doesn't mean they need to accept treatment. It doesn't need to be, they don't need to be on medicines or do talk therapy. In terms of what people can do day to day, I think it's an important distinction. Even people who are not in a depressive episode are likely to feel kind of lousy, at least some of the time. And I encourage people to try to work on their sleep, try to get as consistent sleep as they can, try to have some sort of physical exercise, try to maintain social relationships. You know, that's really hard during COVID, especially has been hard during quarantine, but really encouraging people to make an effort to maintain those social networks.
I think those are all really good practical things that people can do. And I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to join us on the feed. If people want to check out more information, the article we had referred to where we found you is on Mashable.com. Dr. Perlis, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Up next, we meet the company behind a bionic voice box for people who have lost their voice from cancer.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Larynx has created the Bionic Voice, a smart wearable electronic voice prosthetist that uses AI software that over time is able to learn and mimic the natural voice of a patient. The company was also a major prize winner in Australia's Bionics Challenge in 2021. And joining us now is its CEO, Dr. Farzaneh Ahmadi. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with what exactly your company does, and let's get you to explain exactly what Bionic Voice is.
Oh, absolutely. With the existing level of technology, we don't have any choice about our voices. Basically, if anything happens to your voice, or if you don't like your voice, you have to live with it forever. And this is particularly devastating for people who lose their voice. A condition called permanent voice loss, or which is a result of surgical removal of larynx or laryngectomy. Unfortunately, these people, in the absence of a good solution to help them, have the second highest suicide rate among all cancer survivors. So we stepped in to disrupt this market. It has been our aim and passion, basically, to step forward and, for the first time, provide a solution that generates a natural voice for people who don't have a voice or are wishing to have a better voice.
So how does the technology work specifically with regards to artificial intelligence, and how is that mixed in with the device itself?
The core technology is voice cloning, or what we call deepfake voice, which is very similar to deepfake videos, but just in audio. It's an AI engine that gets trained to convert one person's voice to another. And in our case, a distorted voice to sound to like a natural person's voice. That's what the AI does. We have taken this AI and then changed it to a proprietary platform of a device that works very much similar to human larynx. So human larynx normally generates voice in response to breathing. When you breathe, the vocal folds vibrate and generates a voice for you. We have made a model of this, which functions similarly. Basically, our device only uses respiration to generate voice. And once the voice is generated, the AI engine moves that generated voice to sound like the original voice of the person.
So I do realize that you have a demo that you can play for us now. Before you play it, could you just sort of let people know what they are about to hear?
Absolutely. So this is a larynx amputee. So basically, they have absolutely no voice, speaking initially with what is available in the market and after that with our technology. And I hope that the audio explains for itself.
This is a sample quality of a larynx amputee using his existing treatment.
Hi, Ajitin here. I sound robotic.
And our device.
Hello, my name is John and I'm from New York. And I hope you have a nice day. Bye-bye.
So let's talk for a second in terms of what the reaction has been so far. I mentioned in the introduction that you were just a major prize winner, but what are you also hearing from the community of people who could potentially use this software? How do you think this is going to change lives?
This is just to clarify, this is a device with a software, although the device we will also provide. For the reaction, I'm just going to read a text message that one of my patients sent our group. He says, I can't thank you enough to be able to tell my wife and kids that I love them with this quality speech is incredible. And my kids' reaction were priceless. You are doing an amazing thing. I look forward to working with you to champion your work. And please let me know if you can help me. This is one of our patients, a young man, father of three. So far we are doing a showcase of 15 people in Australia, so far we have success with 7 of them. The other guys are being recruited. The solution works, our artificial voice box works for this community of people, which are the permanent voice loss category. And we are super excited because, like I said, this is the first time that an artificial larynx is generating a human voice, which is not robotic and not whispery. So it's a big moment for us. It's a spin out of a decade of research, and we continue our work to basically push this product to the market. This is all. It's also FDA and TGA cleared because it's non-invasive and non-surgical. It has a short time to market too.
It's absolutely remarkable. And as you mentioned, the technology itself, it's not robotic. And I think that's what differentiates it from anything else people might think they've heard of in the marketplace. And so I understand that database of male and female sounding voices that you have. But what I absolutely love is this focus on trying to replicate a patient's voice using old voice recordings or home video. Is to create a personalized sound bank. So from where you are today, before we let you go, where do you see the technology developing and how do you see it having an impact on people's lives further that, you know, currently don't have a voice?
Well, that's an excellent question. At the moment, we wanted to be very pragmatic with this, honestly. And I have to say, the way healthy people think about voice is very different with the way a voiceless person thinks about it. So initially, we wanted to give them a voice that resembles exactly like their own, but they just wanted a voice that is not a head turner, a voice that is natural and they can speak with. So we started with that. At the moment, we are giving generic male and female voice to people. That's our first product. The AI is going to kick in our next version. The AI is established a state-of-the-art technology. As I said, it's voice cloning. It's been there, but no one has taken it and applied it to this category of people. And it is, as you would imagine, it's life-changing. I mean, one of the reasons that we are here as a humble, hardworking team doing this is we love those moments, honestly. Any of these people regaining their voice is a moment that we just want to cherish and then celebrate and then make another one. So for us, at the deepest level, close to our heart, is bringing that moment to life that you give the opportunity of speaking again to someone who hasn't been able to speak with a good voice for a long time.
Well, listen, we just wanted to congratulate you one more time on your award and for all of the excellent work that you're doing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next, what to do about polarizing language online.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
This cybersecurity tip is brought to you by Norton. As tax day gets closer, be on the lookout for tax-related scams. Criminals know that filing taxes can be complicated and that stressed-out consumers may be more likely to fall for phishing scams. An example of a phishing scam is when a cyber criminal sends a fraudulent message designed to trick you into revealing information or deploying malicious software on your device like malware. They know, too, that many taxpayers are happy to pay others to file their taxes for them, often without checking the credentials of these preparers. That's why it's important to be extra vigilant for phishing emails, ghost tax preparers, and phone calls from scammers pretending to be your advocate. To help protect the personal information on your devices, make sure to install device security software as well. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime or identity theft, but Norton 360 is what I trust to help protect my devices and my family's devices against cyber threats. For more information, visit Staples in store or online. Okay.
Socially speaking.
Let's jump in to this week's socially speaking topic. And this is an article that I shared in my newsletter this past week that talks about polarizing language. And I'm going to get feedback from Aaron and Michael on this. Michael has jumped ahead and already read the article, so he really liked the opening sentence from the conversation that says words have consequences. And it is interesting in this article how they talk about the fact that sometimes even words can lead and inspire violent action. And I totally believe this to be accurate. Aaron, maybe I'll start with you. If you've had a chance to kind of glance over the article, do you think it's fair to say that kind of the dialogue we engage with online and the words that we choose and the language that is spread on social can inspire hate in the real physical world?
Definitely. I definitely think so. I definitely think that there have been some hate incidents and violence that has probably been inspired by content seen online. I appreciate this article and I appreciate the discussion we're having. It's so tough, though, to sometimes I feel like the old phrase, you know, pushing sand against the tide, trying to inform people on, you know, better use of language and less polarizing language, because while I applaud it, we live in the clickbait world and the grabby world, and Twitter has to remind you to read the article before you retweet it and not just blindly click on things. And it's easier to read something for not even a second, like less than a second, and click retweet than it is to read it. And so I admire that we're bringing this to light. I just hope it has any impact whatsoever.
Yeah. And Michael, what do you think? I mean, how it's interesting because you're in Australia right now. I don't know if this is as big of a problem as it is in our part of the world. How do you see how we choose words and how they trickle into our everyday personal and physical lives?
So this is interesting because, again, I'll use a media example, and I don't think it's as prevalent here in Australia compared to North America when we're talking about polarizing language. But what I do notice is more and more we are seeing language colored to sway or emote a certain feeling about news. And it was interesting. I knew a friend of mine that worked on a show on the ABC, which is the equivalent to like the CBC or PBS in North America. They were working with an anchor who is, I think, quite good, but left the show because he got a lot of hate online for being too leftist and too this and too doing too much social stories and all these kinds of things. And it was the language, the way people attacked him, and he's now not on social media as a result. And so those words had quite an effect, to the point where it made somebody in a good position doing a good job quit. So that's an extreme. And then if you look at the news, pay attention. And when we look at the different types of ways stories, the same story is done, and they'll use one or two different words that will emote anger or get you riled up to make you go on Twitter and then retweet it and then go down a rabbit hole. So yeah, absolutely. I think that language is important. Words that we use are important, and we have to choose them very carefully, just as we would if someone was standing in front of us having a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because in this article, they talk about seven ways to kind of spot some of that polarizing language. You, again, can read it over at theconversation.com, which is such a great resource for articles that are kind of talking about current affairs. And, they talk about issues like name calling or ad hominems, which is a huge issue, objectification, referring to other people as objects. You know, I just saw a well-known, I would almost call him a kind of right-wing professor who's Canadian, refer to someone who uses, I believe, non-binary pronouns as a thing. So that would be an example of objectification, or in my words, just being a jerk. And overgeneralization.
I'm going to say, or just being ignorant.
So I love that it, you know, the first one they mentioned is the division and identification. Aaron, like just having glanced through this list, is there something that you see on this list that is a growing problem in terms of some of this language that is polarizing as far as what you're seeing people doing the most often?
I don't know if one style listed on this list is growing more than others. They're all, that's why this list is a great list, a great article. They're all being used and overused and being hidden and refined and sugarcoated and made clickable and clickbaitable more and more and more, all of them. Although, I mean, just think back to your Uber driver who was so confident in his belief in misinformation that he felt he could, you know, tell you and your Uber ride unencumbered things that are complete falsehoods. I think that they're all being used and overused and smoothed out and well produced and simplified and put out in more palatable forms all the time.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a really good point. I think there's lots of these examples in terms of what's being used. And listen, it's being used by this sort of divisive language is being used by individuals, but also bots as well, right? I mean, they kind of know what drives that wedge among people. And that's a growing problem, too. Michael, is this the type of thing that's just going to keep getting worse?
Well, I think that it's very important to try and nip it in the bud, especially with kids. I know that it's starting to seep into the education system. We're seeing that, especially in America, when it comes to certain policies. So we have to be very vigilant. The one that I think is very important is everybody does this overgeneralization. And so I remember I went to correct, I had a conversation with my brother. And then as a result of me trying to educate and suggest the other ways of thinking that he's missing and not being so stop him from overgeneralizing, I actually ended up indirectly name calling him. So then I have to be careful too. And then he got upset. So I think it's everyone has to be very mindful of the words and language they use in everyday conversation, and especially online and especially in front of children.
Yeah, I liked how you said that. That was like serious. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you don't want to drive, again, that wedge, you know, kind of a us versus them that we see all the time. So it's a growing problem. I think we're kind of doomed in some ways, unless we start to educate more.
No, we're not. You know what helped? People like you who tweet and correct and try and help. It's like, yeah, honestly, it's every little bit helps.
I like to believe that, but you know, when we start to see sort of political leaders and business leaders kind of use these same techniques, that's what worries me the most. These are people that we expect more from, and unfortunately, we don't necessarily get that. We do have to go, so let us know what you think. You can find us online at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80, and of course, please use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, channel 167.